Saturday morning to you. Tuned in to Rosie on the House, your Saturday morning tradition for 29 years in the garden with John J. Harper of Harper's Nursery. And we, God bless America and the free market, you know. You just can't beat.
Necessity is the mother of invention.
It is.
There you go.
We had a great article out this morning. We've been growing like gangbusters at rosieonthehouse.com. Niche categories all across the state. And subscribers to our newsletter have been seeing those, the new partners all over. And we had five today we wanted to highlight. One is the fruitless citrus tree they're grafting.
Isn't that exciting?
It's ideal for people in, let's say, Arcadia or historic districts where citrus is just part of the neighborhood you move into. But now, after all this time, we've got the roof rat problems. And to combat that, they're making this fruitless citrus tree.
Much like years ago, they came out with the fruitless olive, for the, you know, because it has less pollen. You know, the olive trees were prohibited from being planted in Maricopa County and Pima County because of pollen.
Same with the mulberries.
And mulberries, same way. So, you know, they came out with a fruitless olive that had low enough pollen count that it's been able to be planted here. So we have now the same thing coming out with citrus, and it looks like maybe this fall they'll be available on the market.
That's the latest we heard.
Yeah.
Is
yeah. That's what I've been told, is that hopefully sometimes this fall they'll have a few available. You know, so check with your local garden center.
And there's a lot of different applications for that as well. It is really more of a shrub. A citrus shrub is a great.
Right. You know, we use a lot of ornamental citrus or sour orange as a hedge. And, of course, it can have some fruit, too. So this would be a great utilization for that as a windbreak or a nice screening or hedge plant that you wouldn't have to worry about the fruit drop and the fruit getting on there or the roof rats, that sort of thing.
Wrapping up a couple of our texts here that have come in. Individual wants to know, how aggressive are Chinese orchid root trees? How far away from a septic tank? And they're looking at starting with a 24-inch box.
Well, if you just look at the mature size of a tree, so if an orchid tree, which is kind of a medium-sized tree, 25 or 30 feet tall and wide, the roots are going to kind of mirror the top. And then consider that if there's lots of moisture present, the roots might even get bigger, you know, wider than the top gets. So you wouldn't want, if a tree had a 25 or 30 foot spread, so from the trunk to the radius of the tree would be, let's just say, 15 feet. So we wouldn't want to plant within 15 or 20 feet, probably, of that. If the tree was smaller, we could get a little closer. If it's bigger, obviously, we stay further away than that. That's just a basic rule of thumb.
Another question, they saw from another texter wanting a little help with plant identification. This may be hard. I don't know. You may have the answer. They want to know what looks exactly like mint but has no scent.
Seriously.
Okay.
What looks like
nothing
mint
came to my mind
no
either.
Scent. Boy, I don't know. It could be.
I will tell you.
There is a little ground cover we grow here. Looks a little like mint or strawberry called Potentilla. You know, it could be that. Perhaps Lantana looks a fair amount like mint, you know, but it doesn't have a minty scent, but it has its own unique kind of a scent. So those are the only two that just pop into my mind.
There's a new app that's out there called Garden Answers.
Mm-hmm.
You've had a little success with that.
Yeah, I went around the nursery and tried four or five, you know, what I would have considered not obscure, but things that were unique to here. Hesperalo and Durantas and Tacomas and things, and fairy dusters. It got 4 out of 5 right. However, I was at a friend's house the other night, and they had a bouquet of flowers. It was peonies and clematis and a few things, and it got none of them right.
Oops. So still in the development phase.
Yeah, so, you know, I think it's fun to play with, and it's probably worth, you know, if you're really into plants, it's kind of fun. But it did a pretty good job on the first go-round.
Nice. Last text question here that we'll take. We have transitioning from winter to summer lawn. When should they cut the watering of the rye?
Well, when you if you want to cut the water back or try and burn it up, I guess whenever you want to burn it up. So, you know, as it starts to look brown on its own, again, that's what I use as my trigger mechanism. That's when I start. When the lawn starts to kind of stress out and brown out all on its own, then, you know, that's when I start taking the mowing height down, and you could then reduce the watering. I'm not a huge advocate of just shutting the water off and letting it, you know, because that stresses the underlying Bermuda as well. So be a little careful about doing that. But you certainly can maybe reduce it or don't up the water. A lot of times just by mowing that ryegrass shorter with the warming and hotter temperatures, that will in most cases do it. Then maybe get a dethatcher, get in there and thatch it and get all that ryegrass thatch out.
And next is Hot Dogs and Horticulture going on today at Harper's Nursery.
That's right. We're on our way.
Come on by, get a free hot dog and a free horticultural education.
There you go.